thought you knew, but you had no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You listening to the best podcast in the business. It's the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally. I'm here with my homie Will T. Ray and Al ain't in, but Will T, say hi to the folks. I know I cut you off. My bad.
Thank you. Hello, world. How y'all doing?
Well, I think they said hi right back to you. We're not live. We're not at a freaking restaurant or anything, so they can't say, hi, Will, how you doing?
Yeah, I know.
It's all good. But anyways, like I said, the Urban Sports, anything, you do anything special today or whatever, we need to spark some conversation. We, like, come in and say, what's up, Urban Sports, saying blah, blah, blah. Spark some conversation.
Yeah.
About life.
About life. I don't think I got a chance to mention it on last week's show, but I went to Corey Holcomb's comedy special. At the DC Improv. Okay. Hilarious.
Hilarious?
Hilarious. The best hour.
Oh, you did. That's the 30 minutes. He's better than
Richard Pryor. I think he's as funny as Richard Pryor.
Yeah, you said he's like better than Martin, better than Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy's the second
His stand-up routine is hilarious. He was at the DC Improv this past weekend. For all of those who got a chance to see him, you know exactly what I mean. For those who didn't, you missed out on a true comedic genius.
Oh, well,
guys, hilarious.
All right, you the man now. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. I still think Eddie Murphy is the best. Check out Raw Delirious. We all know it's a classic. For the young kids out there who haven't had the opportunity to check out Raw and Delirious, check it out. It's one of the best stand-ups of all time. And we all know Richard Pryor. Right, well, he's self-explanatory. He is the best man. Well, he is stand-up. Sorry.
He is stand-up comedy.
Yeah, so anyways, let's move on. I didn't mention this earlier. It's the Urban Sports Scene on Eyes Radio. We're part of the Eyes Radio Network. You can check the site out at www.eyesradio.com. Such shows on the network are Chris and the Commish and also Clutch Sports Radio. Also, check out our homies at Voice of the Fan. They're not with Eyes Radio, but they get the job done. They do well. They're similar to our show. Check them out. It's www.thevoiceofthefan.com. And also, we have our show syndicated on the internet radio station, Real People, Real Talk Radio. That show is managed. I mean, that station is managed by our good friends from Applegee's. Make sure you check out the site by visiting www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. You know, it's about that time. So I list off a handful of boatload of stuff. So you know what you're supposed to say
right
now.
It's our tradition, the pregame. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. First off, I want to say RIP to Johnny Tapia. One of the boxers I grew up watching. Entertaining boxer. He passed. Where did he pass?
New Mexico.
New Mexico. He passed New Mexico. So our condolences goes out to him and his family. But did you have anything you want to add to that?
No. He was a true warrior. He's one of the guys, one of the first guys that really made people pay attention to the lighter weight divisions. He brought a lot of notoriety over in the U.S. Traditionally, those divisions have been dominated by Hispanics. So, Johnny Tapia was one of the, I'm not going to say pioneers, but he's one of the guys who definitely brought public eye, put it in the public eye, gave it more notoriety.
Sure did, because when I was watching boxing as a kid, he's one of the people that stuck out to me. I didn't know a lot of boxers. He's one of the people who actually did stick out to me. Let's move on. Move on to another boxing subject. Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley are going to go to war on Saturday. Do you think Timothy Bradley has a chance?
Absolutely. Timothy Bradley is going to win the fight.
Wow.
You heard it here first.
Bold prediction.
That's right. He's going to win the fight. He is going to outclass Manny Pacquiao in every way, shape, and fashion come this Saturday. I'm excited about that fight, but the whole card, I'm not. There isn't a lot of excitement. This doesn't have a lot of pizzazz, a lot of pop to it. I'll end up buying the paper, watch it on pay-per-view. But I probably, Mike Jones.
It. You ain't gonna watch it over somebody's spot. You gonna buy it?
Nah, I'm gonna buy it.
Oh, you the man?
I'm gonna buy it.
I pay for no pay per view.
If it's one of those weekends where I feel like getting out, then I go to a fight party. But this is one of the weekends I'm probably just gonna chill. You heard it here first, Timothy Bradley. I'm saying he'll win 12 rounds, seven out of the 12 rounds, 7-5. To take the title from Manny Pacquiao, and it'll spoil any thoughts that everybody wants of a potential Money Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fight by the end of this year.
If you're on Facebook or Twitter, you already know where I stand with this. This fight is a waste to me. Pac-Man is dominating this fight. You the crazy. Only way Pac-Man loses this fight to me is Timothy Bradley hits him with a non-on-purpose headbutt. That's the only way Timothy Bradley has a chance in this fight. I don't think he has the power enough to scare Manny Pacquiao. I think he's gonna try to intimidate Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao will hit him. This is the most skilled boxer that Timothy Bradley has ever fought to me in anything, you know. Devin Alexander, folks like that. I mean, even though I respect Devin Alexander, his skill set, I just don't think Timothy Bradley hasn't seen a boxer to at this level as Manny Pacquiao. We can name Lamont Peterson, but Lamont Peterson, the Lamont Peterson that fought Timothy Bradley wasn't the same Lamont Peterson that fought Amir Khan.
Yeah, it was.
No, that Lamont Peterson put it all out there. Like, we all know Lamont Peterson is a timid boxer.
It's just that Timothy Bradley dominated. No. Because systematically took apart Lamont Peterson.
Lamont Peterson played the same way against Victor Ortiz fought the same way. He's always that type of boxer. He doesn't believe in letting his hands go. Against Khan, he let his hands go.
He let his hands go against Tim Bradley. No, he let his hands go against Tim Bradley.
No,
it's just that Tim Bradley systematically took him apart and shut him down.
I will say this. Timothy Bradley will be knocked out. My thing, he'll be knocked out. Or TK, whatever, the fight stopped. 9th, 10th round. This is a Pacquiao dominated fight. Honestly, this is an ideal Pacquiao fight. Timothy Bradley matches up well against Manny Pacquiao.
See, that's what a lot of people out there are saying, but it really doesn't.
There's no power to scare Pac-Man. There's no power to scare him.
Okay.
And he's not that skilled of a boxer.
He is very skilled. Oh, he's very skilled.
He's a skilled headbutter. All right.
Okay.
Avid headbutter.
We'll see. Once we have in this show next Tuesday. And I'll be saying I told you so.
I'll be saying I told you so. And Manny, watch out for the headbutts. The dude he's a poor man, Evander Holyfield, with the headbutts. He's dirty. Watch out.
He's not dirty.
He's dirty. Even Roy Jones said it. He accidentally, but on purpose, headbutts you. Like, he does it by accident, but there's a skill to it.
It's just that once he throws his jab, it's just that his head is down so low when he comes forward.
I always say this, man. It's an accident maybe once or twice, but it happens almost in every fight. It ain't that much of an accident. Anyway, let's move on down the list. Tiger Woods, he did it, man. He won. He won the Memorial Tournament. I saw the highlights. I really didn't see it on TV.
You didn't
or
watch
anything.
It Sunday?
No, I don't watch golf. But I'm not. Oh, I will say man. This. I will say this. I am now a big Tiger Woods fan. Ever since the scandal of him screwing porn stars, and ever since I actually pay attention to people, say he curses out fans. I like him. I remember, I saw it on ESPN. I think it was on the second day of the tournament, or the first day of the tournament. I think he hit it in the sand, and like a fan must have said something before the shot, because A, he cursed himself, and then he looked back at the crowd and like what the F, you know what I mean? So I'm a big Tiger Woods fan. Like, at first I thought I didn't care about the dude. I thought he was kind of corny, but now he's at edge. But I like him. And I like that people hate him so much. They hate him so much that I want him to succeed.
Speaking of people hating Tiger Woods, you know, I think it was like last year or 2 years ago, they came out with a poll and they asked who was the most vilified athlete. And Tiger Woods was number one. I think LeBron James is number one this year. But 2 years ago, it was Tiger Woods after the scandal. I want to know why is it that, even though he's one of the most vilified athletes, on Sunday afternoon, if Tiger's in contention, it's must-see TV?
Because, I mean, people hate greatness. People hate what they don't understand. That's before people, especially any time you have an opportunity to surpass the so-called greatest of all time, or whatever, like I think it's Jack Nicholson.
He actually tied Jack Nicholson for PGA win 73.
All right.
This past Sunday at Jack Nicholson's tournament.
Even anytime you're supposed to pass the present or the whatever, historical great, whatever, people hate because they're used to loving that guy. They don't want to see anybody better than that guy. They don't. It's just a fact. And the same goes for LeBron. Like, people for a couple years have said, like, Kobe Bryant is the best in the NBA. People hate LeBron because he surpasses Kobe. I'm sorry. Three MVPs. He surpassed Kobe. And people hate him for that. You know what I mean? So that's what it is. It's like, people hate when you at that. They hate that hard. Like, you about to pass somebody that you idolize or you think is great, then people hate on him. Especially in Tiger Woods' case, when he knows he's great. Like back then, he knew he was great. People were waiting for his downfall. That's the main. That's the vicious thing about it. People were waiting for his downfall, and when they got it, it was like, all right, you know, we're happy. Phil Mickelson, he's now happy, and that dude doing little slide shots of Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. You know what I mean? Like folks like this, they want to cheer on because Tiger Woods is like Darth Vader, and I'm rooting for Darth Vader. He's the bad guy. I'm rooting for the bad guy. Say hello to my little friend.
I've always said that Tiger has too much talent to not regain his standing that he once had before the scandal. Everyone who's counting him out and saying Tiger Woods will never be as good as he was before.
Still young,
he's,
though.
Yeah, he's still young. The guy's 36 years old. I think he needs 9 more wins to have the most wins ever on the PGA Tour. And I think he needs another, 4 or 5 majors?
Majors, yeah.
Something like that. I'm not a golf expert, but like I said, Sundays when he's in contention, I do flick in between golf and something else to see what's going on just because the guy is must-see TV.
All right, real quick, do you think Tiger's chances – let me do it this way. Is Tiger officially back? And two, what are his chances of winning the U.S. Open?
Is he officially back? I'm not going to say he's officially back. I need him to win consistently. Like, he won prior previously this year. He won this time. I need to see one more win this year before
I say. Clutch. That last shot was clutch.
Yeah, it was clutch. It was clutch. That was probably one of the best shots anyone's ever seen. I think that was on 16, that wedge when he was in the rough.
Oh, look at you, that wedge.
No, I do think he's starting to ascend, going back to where he was previously. I don't think he'll ever reach that peak, that pinnacle that he once was.
Yeah,
but I think he's starting to ascend. And I give him a 60% chance of winning the U.S. Open.
Well, I think all the talk and all the doubt has fueled him. I think Tiger Woods is like a lot of athletes that if you keep, you know, trying to knock them down, they give back up and they give back up stronger. Kobe Bryant's one of those athletes, even though I can't stand him. Michael Jordan is one. The greats, Magic Johnson, a lot of them. If you badmouth them and say they can't do it, that's when they succeed. And that's when they get at it even harder. And Tiger Woods is no different than any of those guys I just mentioned. I mentioned Phil Mickelson. He had a sly comment about Tiger Woods. I think about a reference about him in a book or something like that. He had a sly comment that.
But then Phil ended up pulling out of the tournament because of mental fatigue.
Yeah, whatever. He didn't want to see Tiger. Yeah. And so I think Tiger Woods, he's taking all that in. And I think, like, the U.S. Open is definitely the scene and the environment for Tiger Woods to unleash his greatness one more time. And once he does that, I would love to see an interview. I would love to see the post-tournament interview, you know, and I want to see what he has to say.
Absolutely. But anyway, from Tiger Woods, let's talk about our local losers, the Wizards. They retained it, Coach Randy Whitman.
I'm happy about it, actually.
You're happy about it for 2 years.
I think that's a good deal. I think it's actually a good sign.
You know what I think? His signing indicates that, to me, Ted Leonsis knows.
Cheap.
Yeah, one is cheap. And for two, he knows that this team isn't ready to contend or is nowhere near ready to win.
I told a coworker, and I will say this easily, if the Wizards draft right, I won't be surprised they get the AFC in the playoffs. Easily. Even with Randy Whitman. That's a bold prediction for you.
That's a bold prediction.
I think Randy Whitman deserves the job. I'll say this. I do understand where certain Wizards fans are upset that Randy Whitman's got an extension or they retained his services, let me put it that way, because, you know, you had coaches like Nate McMillan out there.
That's my point.
Yeah, I agree.
I was going to say, you know, you extend Randy Whitman without even bringing a guy in like Nate McMillan, a guy who's a former point guard in this league and can help develop your number one overall draft pick, John Wall, a guy who's kind of regressed a little bit in his development, who hasn't developed the jumper, is still 100 miles per hour, and plays out of control at times.
Yep, I mean, I think John Wall has improved towards the end of last season. But like, you have a valid point. I'm not knocking your point. Like, Nate McMillan should at least got an interview, or they should have pursued him hard. I don't know if they did or didn't, honestly. I don't know. maybe Nate McMillan said, I don't want to come here. And they were squashed off the bat. I don't know. But I see where Wizard fans are coming from that, you know, Nate McMillan didn't come. And that's Nate McMillan didn't get the opportunity to be interviewed for the job. That's it, though. Everybody else, I'm not really worried about, including D'Antoni.
D'Antoni, I'm not
Jerry Sloan
about.
Was not coming
Jerry
here.
Jerry Sloan, this team isn't ready to contend.
But Jerry Sloan wasn't coming here regardless.
Phil Jackson, don't even think about
it.
Well,
I mean, you just got to know what kind of coach you can bring
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I think Nate McMillan
would have probably took the job.
Yeah, would have been the best guy for the job.
Nate McMillan would be the guy. I want to say the best. Because Jerry Sloan to me is the best coach out of that list. What he can work with, to me, in my opinion. If we're looking at the Wizards, Jerry Sloan is done in Utah when players left and still competed at a high level. Phil Jackson is to be determined if he can even take a team without the star so far. That round, that was actually vicious. And also, what I'm thinking of, Nate McMillan, now he's a great coach. I think Nate McMillan is an awesome coach because how many people in Portland went down and he still made that team compete. But I just feel like Nate McMillan, how Portland was put together, like you said, how Portland was put together, his ego would allow him to take a Washington Wizards job. I don't think Jerry Sloan, where he's at in his career, would come take the job. He could be offered the job, but there'll be better offers, and he'll be like, nah, I'm not taking this job.
Absolutely not. And I'll say just for two reasons I say he's an ideal candidate. One, because of the John Wall factor. And also, two, you got to remember, Nate McMillan had that Blazers team when they were extremely young.
I agree.
When they had Brandon Roy, was a rookie. When they had LaMarcus Aldridge, was a rookie. Greg Oden before all the injuries, and then the other cast of players they had around. So this, I'm not saying by far this Wizards team has that caliber of talent, but he's used to coaching a young team and coaching them to a level where they're playoff worthy. That's why I was saying Nate McMillan would have been the ideal candidate for this team.
But back to Randy Whitman, just give him some credit though. You know, he did end the season off in a 6-game winning streak. And I think they respond to him. I just like, honestly, I'm going to be real with you. I just like the way he treated, like, JaVale McGee and, like, Andre Blatch.
Oh, yeah,
basically.
He brought discipline.
I loved
discipline. He brought discipline and accountability to this team.
Because to me, it showed that Flip Saunders just didn't care. So, obviously, Randy Whitman, he cared. Like, he wanted to put a product on the court that was respectable, and played the right way. Flip Saunders, kept playing Blatch, even though he was loafing. But when they got Whitman, you could tell Whitman probably was sitting on the sideline saying to himself that if I get an opportunity to coach this team, I'm not taking the BS that Flip did. That dude ain't hustling. He on the bench. If that dude playing stupid and slow, he ain't playing. You know what I mean? I like that. I think that he holds his players accountable.
I mean, a guy like Randy Whitman, we're going to wrap this up, but just one last comment. He's a guy who, because of his coaching record, isn't going to get a lot of opportunities to coach, be a head coach in this league. He'll be an assistant coach. I think that he got this opportunity. He said, look, this may be my last opportunity, so I'm going to do it my way, and anyone who isn't going to go with the program is going to sit on the bench.
Yeah, enough, like you said, enough about the Wizards. The Wizards, the Wizards hope to be like OKC, who are one game away from reaching the NBA Finals. When we get back, we'll be talking about the game last night between OKC and the Spurs, and tonight's game with the Celtics and the Heat. Urban Sports Scene, Eyes Radio.
For ages.
You dig?
The Eyes Radio Network is one of the fastest growing sports networks in the Washington, D.C. area, with great shows like Chris and the Commish and the Urban Sports Scene, plus media and athlete interviews and other content. You will get all the great sports coverage for the DMV and whatever's happening around the nation. Eyes Radio is built on listening on your time, whether it's listening to one of our shows live, downloading from iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app, or just on the website. We make it easy for you to listen to us when you want. Always let people know that you're listening to your favorite show on www.eyesradio.com. That's www.eyesradio.com. And follow us on Twitter at Eyes Radio.
You can still listen to the show by visiting www.waleo.podbean.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any comments or questions, just email us at urbansports@eyesradio.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Steeler Fan. The show is hosted by Doc Hancock and West Coast Steeler Fan.
All right, like I mentioned before the break, last night the Thunder went up 3-2 in the series. James Harden came clutch. You watched the game. You see what happened.
Absolutely. I was actually having a conversation with one of my friends earlier, and he said that this was going to be one of those series where he thought that the home team would win the last three games. And I told him, no, sir. OKC. And I say the difference is OKC with the Spurs are an older team. OKC is a younger, fresher, faster, stronger team, and they sense the blood in the water. They sense that, hey, we got this team back. We got this team with their back on the ropes. Let's finish them. These guys are champions. Let's not give them any opportunity. Let's squash on their heart. Let's just stomp it out. At the beginning of the game, I like how OKC weathered the storm, because if you remember, San Antonio started out, I think it was like a 7-0 run to start the game. Yeah. OKC turned the ball over a lot, especially Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, he did.
But they persevered, and Durant came up clutch during the fourth quarter. Total 22 in the second half. The guy made a killing.
The real clutch dude. Oh my God,
James Harden.
I swear, like James Harden is special. He went from to me being just a star, potential star in the NBA, to being special. Like, with the right team, if OKC doesn't sign him and want to feature him, whatever. I mean, OKC doesn't sign him and he's on a team where he can be featured. That dude is like special. It's like when McGrady was in Toronto. And he decided to leave, but you knew McGrady had special ability. Mm-hmm. But he went to Toronto. He went to Orlando. Special, like I'm telling you, that dude is real. But to me, it's gonna sound funny. It's gonna sound obvious. But the worst thing that happened to the Spurs is OKC winning Game 3, because a young team, once the young team knows they can beat you, especially a talented team that plays the right way, not just a young team who's just talented, but a young team that plays the right way, is coached decently and well, they get the opportunity to get confidence, it's a problem. And I always said this in the series, that the Spurs were a better team overall, but OKC had the mismatch. They had the matchups, you know, in their favor, like Westbrook, Parker. Regardless of the fact, Westbrook can take Parker. There's no answer. There is no player on the Spurs roster that can bother Kevin Durant, like that can truly bother him. Steven Jackson's tried.
Yeah, that first game he had some success.
He's tried.
First game.
He's tried. You know,
he had some success.
Tried. I'm talking about it as a series, though. He's tried.
Okay.
You know, he's tried. You know, Artest can bother Durant. I'm going back to the old Lakers series. He could bother Durant throughout the whole series, but Durant was just good enough to score on him regardless. But Kevin Durant, there's no answer for Kevin Durant, or whatever you want to call it. James Harden is a problem. And Tim Duncan, the state of his career, these guys can still go in a hole and not be intimidated by Tim Duncan.
Absolutely not.
Blocking shots.
Yeah, they don't have San Antonio doesn't have anyone who aggressively defends the rim. Who's going to alter your shots like OKC has? A Serge Ibaka.
Did you see that block?
Kendrick Perkins.
Ginobili and down the stretch?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I did.
Whew.
One thing I did notice about this San Antonio team that I think is going to hinder them, much like it hinders the Chicago Bulls, they only have two guys that can create shots for themselves and everyone else. Parker and Ginobili.
Ginobili!
Outside of those two, they don't have anyone that can create a shot for themselves and anyone else on the team. But with OKC, you have three guys off the top. Their three best players can create shots for themselves and everyone else. And then, Derek Fisher's just a guy who's just going to bring the ball up.
Derek Fisher don't do nothing, but shoot.
Daquan Cook can create his own
shot. Oh, big ups to Daquan Cook. He didn't get any burn in the series, and all of a sudden he came into game five like gangbusters and drained some threes. Big ups to Daquan Cook. Yeah, I'm with you. This series is over.
Yeah, this, and another thing about this OKC team, you got I looked it up. Durant's 23, Westbrook's 22, and Harden's 22.
Yeah, it's just too young. They're too
dynasty.
Young.
If they can sign Harden,
that's it.
It's
that's
a dynasty. Everyone, LeBron said 4, 5, 6, nobody.
Now with that team in the way, I'm not gonna lie to you. With that team in the way, but you mentioned Harden. Let's go to that. You mentioned Harden. Like I said, he was big down the stretch. Do you think he'll be part of the OKC next year?
Absolutely do.
Okay.
I think that James Harden understands the importance of
team,
and also what they could potentially be. I don't know. I'm not going to say this guy's going to go out. He's going to sign a 5 or 6 year deal, but I do think James Harden will say, "I'll sign a 3 year deal, not necessarily max money, but damn near max money, and they'll contend for the next three years, potentially getting two championships." Because I do think that OKC beats Miami.
I don't think so, but I'm not this year, but probably next year. My opinion is, in this matter, is I think the owner came out and pretty much said they're willing to take a luxury tax. I think they can sign Harden, but they'll have to hit the luxury tax. I mean, Harden and what's his face?
Serge
Ibaka.
Yeah.
So willing to take the L for him.
Why wouldn't you?
I agree. You have to take the L for him. But my thought process, again, I mentioned earlier with Harden, is that he's special. He's not just an all-star. He's special. And there is opportunity out there for him to be marketed as a star. Yeah. I'm talking about within not just on the floor,
with the
court.
Yeah, exactly,
with a beard and everything. Not just on the court, but outside. You know what I mean? Like shoe deals and everything. And the best way to do it is not to be a six man. I'm just saying. I'm being real.
No, it's
being the face of a franchise.
Yeah, you absolutely right. But to me, even, you know, Harden's very young, and he's proven this year that he could be a guy who can score consistently. But to me, he hasn't do it more than 1 year.
Well, this is why they traded Jeff Green, man. They saw it.
Yeah, they saw it. They definitely. Yeah.
I mean, if you watch Harden, and then one thing about Harden, I'm gonna be real, that dude has been like this since college in Arizona State, man. When they got him, he was dropping big buckets as a freshman off the bat, you know. So he's a scorer. Like Harden is a scorer. He's real, you know. And to be honest with you, he didn't even have this J like he has now in college. So you know he works. You know what I mean? You know he works for his. He works on his craft. So I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, in one way, I want to say that yeah, Harden is going to be OKC. They're going to have a dynasty. They're going to try to have a dynasty. This is going to be the epic rivalry from, like, back in the day when it was the Lakers and Celtics. If you could have Miami on the East, OKC in the West, and we can see this matchup consistently, like, almost, yeah, very, very consistently over the next decade or so.
That would be nice. The NBA definitely needs that. Yeah. That's something they want. I think a couple years ago, the NBA lost out on the matchup they really wanted in the finals when Orlando played the Lakers.
They wanted LeBron versus Kobe
because, you know, just like when Jordan was starting to ascend and win all his titles, the NBA got lucky and it was Magic and the Lakers versus the Bulls for that first championship.
And back then, if you really want to break it down, but they didn't get it, they really wanted the Lakers versus the Bulls when Jordan came back. They wanted to see the young up and start Lakers with Shaq, Nick Van Exel, A. Jones, Kobe Bryant versus the Bulls. But Utah kept ruining that back mm-hmm. then. So, but let's move on down. I said it, but I didn't get your answer. Do you think this? You think this series is over?
OKC?
Yeah.
Yeah, six.
It's six. You think it's over, right?
It's over, six.
Yeah, did you see Tim Duncan's face?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man, he's dejected. It's over. If you look at his face. His face speaks volumes. I was on Twitter, and I just tweeted, like, this series is over. I mean, on Facebook, and people were like, it's over. Like, how do you figure it's over? Like, dude, look at Tim Duncan's face. Look at his face after that game. If you looked at his face, you would say, oh, yeah, it's over. Like, his face, he had his head down. His hands behind his head, like he thought the series was actually over.
Well, in defense of Tim Duncan, we all know that he isn't the guy who shows the most emotion.
He showed emotion yesterday.
Maybe he was just, you know, just kind of detested about how the game went. And maybe, you know, it's not necessarily in his mind the whole series is over. Maybe that's just how he was expressing his frustration for this team losing three in a row. Because you got to remember, up until when they lost that first game against OKC in the playoffs, this is a team that won 34 out of the last 38 games they played in 20 games in a row. So, he hasn't been accustomed to losing for some time.
All I gotta say, it's tough when you have to play actual competition in the playoffs. speaking of Tim Duncan, do you think Timmy D retires after this season?
Absolutely not. Okay. The guy has at least, I'll say, two very strong years left in him.
As a role player, right? That's what he is typically right
now.
He's
definitely not the most dominant or the best player on your team, but he's definitely a guy who'll still average 18 and 10.
Yeah, he doesn't average 18 anymore. Not at all.
No,
He's got 13, if that.
I think that a regular full NBA season, 82 games, not this compact season, Tim Duncan still averages 18 and 9 at the minimum.
When I watch Tim Duncan play, and I want people to hear this, that I am a big fan of Tim Duncan. I'm such a fan of Tim Duncan that I can honestly debate that Tim Duncan may be better than Shaq, and probably was better, probably his era was like the best player in his era. But you know what? To watch Tim Duncan now, it just saddens me, man. It really does. Like, to watch a dude that I watched, and I grew up a Lakers fan, to watch a dude that I watched when he went against Shaq and Robert Horry, that front line, and the state, and we had no answer for him whatsoever. And at times he would guard Shaq and do a decent job. When I see the way this dude right here has aged and his game isn't the same. He doesn't hit the backboard shot as perfect as he used to. He doesn't dominate in the post like he used to. I just shake my head. I'm like, Timmy D, you might, though I think you can still probably score in a couple of cats in the league, just think about retiring. You might not, like Will said, you might not need to retire because you can still score you can still do your thing on certain teams or certain games, excuse me. But just think about it, really, man. Think about it, because the Tim Duncan that I see now is a shell of his former self, man. A shell.
I agree with you, but I'll just say this. Opposed to you, if you think about most of the great players or the best players over the past 20 years in the NBA, a lot of them did it with athleticism.
Yeah, that's true.
Tim Duncan, his dominance was concentrated over skill.
That's true.
It wasn't any physical prowess, no speed, no trick shots, no his footwork is very good for a big man, but it's all pure skill. And that's why I'm saying Tim Duncan can still give you two elite, I'm not going to say elite, very high level years, giving you 18 and 9, and probably that last year it'll probably go down to somewhere like 15 and 7.
No, I agree with you. He's definitely predicated on skill. But I think the athleticism that he did lose has hurt tremendously. You know what I mean? And he didn't use a lot. He didn't use the athleticism. You're right. But the little that he did have, because he was never known as an athletic wonder. Excuse me. But that the little that he did have, he used it well. And I think that whatever he lost is hurting him. You know, and that's the thing that affects. I think that's what's affecting his game. But Tim Duncan, just think about it, man. You're too good. I'm sorry. I hate seeing players that when you watch, you're like, damn, you were the best. Like, I think if my memory serves me correctly, Tim Duncan's a two-time MVP. Not one, but two-time MVP. You were like the best, man, in your era. Like, the best. Like, understand this. Shaq and Kobe, what is known as one of the best duos to ever play in this game, you beat them. You beat them.
Multiple times.
Multiple times, man. And to see this Tim Duncan, it just saddens me. But, I mean, let's move on down. I can keep talking about it forever. The Heat and Celtics are playing tonight.
Tip-off is 30 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. And the winner pretty much has a nice hold on the series. First off, what are the keys for either team in this series for you? I mean, this game for you.
The key for the Celtics for me is Ray Allen has to get off. He has to get off. Paul Pierce, you know he's going to give you what he's going to give you. Garnett has dominated the paint. Well, no, I'll say that two keys. Garnett has to continue to dominate the paint, and Ray Allen has to get off for this game. And also, Boston has to close out on the passing lanes, has to close out on the passing lanes defensively against this the Heat team. For the Heat, dictating the pace, transition, you got to get up and down the court. Two, it's very hard for them to do, but score in the half court. And three, those role players, those, like last week when I said two of the three guys, two of their three key role players, Chalmers, Battier, and Mike Miller, you got to get double-digit points from two out of those three guys for the Heat.
I agree with you with most of it. Ideally for Boston, to me, main thing is they have to establish Kevin Garnett in the post. That's the main thing. I think Ray Allen has found a rhythm. I think the last two to three games, he's actually started knocking down jump shots. So Ray Allen's found a rhythm. But you have to establish Kevin Garnett because there's mismatch. It's a big mismatch. It's the mismatch for them, honestly. That is the ideal one. Like Anthony, Turioff, or Haslam, none of them can check Garnett in the block. They're just too short. And it's not that Garnett's the imposing figure he used to be in the block, but he's too tall and he's too long and he can get a shot off on him anytime he wants to because he shoots from a high angle anyway. So that's the advantage. They had to go to that. And honestly, I want to see, and no one's really talking about it, because at first, you know, Miami was getting all the calls and everybody complained about it because it was home court. So I don't know why people were complaining about it. Boston got the calls in Boston. That's a fact. But Boston didn't complain anymore. That's a fact. They got the calls at home. Now it's going back to Miami. I want to see, you know, Rondo make that smart comment talking about they complained and transitioned in the halftime. I want to see, because they pretty much acted like little bees when Miami was getting the calls in Miami. I want to see how they react in Miami when the referees are giving Miami the calls. But best believe, Miami's getting calls tonight.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about
LeBron that. LeBron got fouled out on a play that Petrus grabbed him down. Best believe Miami's getting calls. Now see how Boston reacts from that. That's going to be the telling sign. Do they get flustered or do they just keep it moving?
Yeah. You know, another key for this game is a guy who potentially might be coming back. He's a game time decision, Chris Bosh. He's missed the past ever since, I want to say, since game two of the Indiana series.
What's the game one?
Game one.
Okay, they lost. They won. It's game one. I think it's game one.
Okay. Chris Bosh may be back tonight. Do you think that's a good play by the Heat to bring him back right now?
I wouldn't bring him back now. I don't think that he's really needed in this series. I don't care anybody tells me. I think LeBron and D-Wade are in a – well, LeBron is in a rhythm. D-Wade is streaky, but they do have good roles within this. Like, D-Wade is off the ball. LeBron is being that LeBron in Cleveland. I think, you know, I would say Chris Bosh for the finals, but that's me. I think they can beat the Celtics without Bosh. I don't think he's that essential in this series. That's
I agree to you to with you to a certain degree. I don't think bringing Chris Bosh now, game five where it's tied up 2-2, and LeBron and D-Wade are playing some of the best ball they've played together,
Other than yesterday.
Playing off each other, I don't think now is necessarily the time to bring them. Some people will say, well, if you don't bring them now and then Miami goes down 2-3, would you bring them back game six? Yeah, absolutely. I think you bring them back in just enough time where he can fit, where he's physically ready. He's 100, I'll say at least 85%. And his conditioning is better, because if you're going to go and play the Thunder the next round, you have to get him in and start to establish and get that synergy and get that flow between those three guys.
So you'll have him. You would have him if Miami wins this game. You would have them and have him in game six, regardless. Because you want him to be trained for his conditioning.
Yeah, I want for conditioning purposes. I say bring him back in game six.
But to me, so would it matter if he was 100% or not?
If he was close to 100, it depends. If he's close to 100%, then I say hold them off.
Yeah.
Until, you know, get them some those few practice days in between the end of the conference championships and the start of the NBA finals. But it's kind of iffy.
You raise a valid point. I mean, when you said, you know, give them conditioning at game six because they win and they play OKC, he needs to be ready.
Yeah,
because,
you know, cause conceivably you can close out game six.
Yeah. And
but to me, you know, you play today and all likelihood Miami's going to win this game. We all know that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any
doubt about that. Miami will win this game. Then you bring him back game six. He gets one game to get his conditioning ready. Then he gets the practice days in between for the finals. But
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. A couple of nights ago. That's what I meant when I was referring to game four a couple nights ago, not yesterday. My bad. But all right, LeBron. You saw LeBron had an opportunity, you know, before he got fouled out with that BS call. But he had an opportunity to close down the stretch. He dribbled the ball in the triple coverage, tried to find Haslam in the corner. Ball was tipped. But he did make a big three in that run. What are your thoughts about LeBron's play down the stretch in this series as a whole, game four?
I I'm not one of these guys who criticize and hate LeBron.
Yeah.
I haven't had any problem with his play down the stretch to close out games. He's missed some free throws that he could have made. But outside of that, he hasn't done anything to me that's really warranted the heavy criticism he's gotten in the past. One thing I will point out is why isn't, you know, after Dwayne Wade missed that shot in game four, why didn't he receive the immense criticism that LeBron has received? Because if that was LeBron, you know, one or two things, either he would have got criticized for not taking the shot or he would have got vilified for taking the shot and missing it. Dwayne Wade, you know, had a very good look at that three and missed it.
If that was LeBron, for real, it wouldn't have just been the shot. It would have been three things. It would have been what you said. Why Dwayne Wade? One thing, it would have been Dwayne Wade who took the shot. It would have been LeBron misses again. And why did LeBron shoot a three? That would have been like, why did LeBron shoot a three?
Yeah, and I actually think that Dwayne Wade made the right decision in taking the three because when you're on the road, you lost your best player. You try to close out the game. You don't take it to overtime and extend the game because then you run into a situation where in a series where you're playing every other day, playing the extra 5 minutes or whatever it is in overtime could only make your team more winded. You already lost your best player. Take the three. You're on the road. Go for the win.
Yeah, I agree. As you mentioned Dwayne Wade, you think LeBron James has officially taken over Miami and made it his team, not Dwayne Wade's team anymore?
Dwayne Wade has even alluded to it that when after LeBron won the MVP, he said, you know, I'm going to take a back seat. This is LeBron's team. He's the MVP of the league. He's the best player in the league. Why not? But we all do know when it comes to taking that one last shot, whose hands the ball will be in. It'll be in Dwayne Wade's hands.
Yeah, which sometimes I don't agree with at times. I think it should go if Dwayne Wade is killing, because, I mean, he's a star. Don't get twisted. If Dwayne Wade is killing, he should get the ball. If LeBron James is killing, he should get the ball down the stretch. I don't see how it should be, all right, if LeBron James is killing, Dwayne Wade should get the ball down the stretch. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, whoever has the high hand, go with the high hand.
Yeah, exactly.
You never go wrong with the guy if you go with the high hand.
Exactly. And it's up to them to make the play, you know. But let's go down. Let's talk about Boston. We did a lot of Miami talk. Let's be fair. Rondo has played great this series. I've actually changed my mind about Rondo.
I was about to say, you know, you were the guy, you know, last year you had the rant.
You got to check. If you've been
down from day one, you know exactly how Wally has felt in the past.
And
about
also, if you
Rajon Rondo.
If you're new to the urban sports scene, just Google urban sports scene Rajon Rondo. It's probably on YouTube too, I think.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube too. Or even on Google it, urban sports scene with it, Rajon Rondo. I go off on the dude. I go with the young people call. I go ham on him. Yeah, man, he's improved to me. He's now, to me, one of the – I can see people's argument if they want to say, like, all right, Ray John Rondo is the best point guard in basketball. I can now see an argument. At first, I couldn't see nothing. You know what I mean? But I saw it, honestly, to be real with you, I saw it the first game of the season against the Knicks. I was like, this ain't the same Rondo that I know. Like, this Rondo is shooting Jays. Yeah. Now, I don't care if you're making them. No, I don't care if you're making them. I'm saying you're willing to shoot Jays now.
Yeah, and it used to be before he would pass up the shot or try to penetrate, but now he's not reluctant to take the open jump shot. He's knocking down that 15 to 18-foot jump shot when he's open. He's creating he's clearly the leader of this team, creating shots for himself and everyone else. On the defensive end, we all know Rajon Rondo, he's a menace on the ball and even playing the passing lanes. This guy's developed into clearly one of the top, I say, 4 point guards in the NBA.
Yeah. Where do you have him ranked, though, officially? Because it's hard for me. I ain't going to lie.
Well, we all know – you know who my –
Well,
I
got Chris Paul one, too.
Yeah,
I got number one.
Chris Paul is the best point guard in the NBA, hands down to me.
He's the best.
He's number one. Number two, I have to go – I still have to go with Derrick Rose.
I don't even like Derrick Rose in the argument. You know what? All right, if I haven't go off that alone – then I can edge Derrick Rose over all of them. But I don't like putting Derrick Rose in that point guard discussion the best. Because he is a point guard. Don't get me wrong. He is a point guard.
But he's more of a scoring guard.
He's like the Shaq of point guards. It's like he – because, you know, when he plays all – to be totally real with you, when he plays all of those point guards we mentioned, he's the one that shines over all of them.
Yeah, he's just physically – he's more physically dominant and athletic. He's a – far superior athlete.
Well, that's 86 Rose out the discussion. Let's just not put him in the discussion. Who's your best point? Your best
point
guard without Rose. Without Rose, I mean, he's that good.
Without Rose, all right. Chris Paul, of course, is number one to me. If I had to pick a number two that can't be Derrick Rose, I would go with. Deron Williams.
Yeah,
if I had to go number two.
Yeah.
Three, Rondo. And four, people aren't going to
Parker?
Parker. I was going to say people aren't going to agree with it necessarily, but Parker.
No.
And then five, I would – if I want to go five, I would have to go with Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I like Russell Westbrook. He's showing me a lot. Screw what everybody else thinks. I like – obviously, you know, I like Paul one. I ain't going to lie. Paul's one. You might find it surprising. I think Rondo is too. I think Rondo is too. I like Deron Williams. I love Deron Williams. I think Deron Williams is a beast. Deron Williams would be three. Parker would be four. And I guess I would put. You know what? I'm going to go with good old reliable because Russell Westbrook is a Rose dude too. I can't put Rose in my thing. I can't put. I can't put Russell in either. So I'm going to go with good old reliable. I'm going to go with Steve Nash at five.
Okay.
Steve Nash still does. He still does it. But, yeah, it's a hard discussion. But Rondo definitely improved in my thought. But let's go to this game tonight. Who do you think wins tonight? I think we both pretty much did. Matter of fact, why am I even asking that question?
Miami.
We both know Miami's winning.
Miami's winning.
Steven, I'm going to do a Stephen A. Smith style. Game five is over already. Miami already won. And – yes, if I'm wrong, you can tweet us and whatever, but it's over. Miami won this game easily. Right.
Give me who's going hard in the paint for tonight's game.
I just dropped the music and it sounds good. Walker! You should say Flocka.
Flocka!
There you go. Who's going to go hard in the paint? Now, I could say, obviously, I'm going with a Heat player because I predict the Heat's going to win. So, I'm going to go with Norris Cole. I think stupid Spoelstra finally found out that Cole's is still on the team. This is a dude that actually ball free in the regular season, ball well, and all of a sudden you're forgetting your rotations again. But I think Norris Cole will get an opportunity to play in this game, this big game. And this is one kid who's not scared of the moment. And I think he'll even play better at home. So I see Norris Cole going hard in the paint.
Okay, well, I'm going to go, you know, it's easy to go with a LeBron or go with Dwayne Wade. I'm going to go with another guy off the bench. I'm going to go with James Jones. I think he lights it up tonight. Probably hits about 4 3-pointers tonight.
All right. Yeah, it is a home game. So role players typically play well on at home. So I'm interested to see what Boston player on the bench to try to step up to help out the big four, I guess. Actually, still the big three because Ray Allen ain't the same. Anyway, the struggling Orioles are playing the other Boston team, the Boston Red Sox, tonight. When we get back, we'll dive into the state of the Orioles and also some Nats talk.
Urban Sports Team.
Eyes Radio. You dig?
For ages.
You can now hear the Eyes Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear the Eyes Radio Network, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. Download it. It's free. Takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Eyes Radio, EYESRADIO, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand. No syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to enter promo code Eyes Radio when you register. King Kong, you know my demo.
Baseball's no limo, home. I'm stacked up too. Make sure you listen to us on the Apple G's radio show on Sundays, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/Apple G's. The show is hosted by Coach Rodney and the lovely Vivian. I was on that show on Sunday, and we talked about, what the hell we talk about? We talked about the possible playoffs in college football. How Coach mentioned how they should go back to regional action rather than, you know, worried about these massive, colossal conferences. Yeah, he would, like, go back to regional where he grew up watching, like, college football back in the B.C. times. that's my man. Coach Ron, that's my man. But he was right, though, honestly. He gave me some interesting stuff that I didn't know. I didn't know that, for instance, I didn't know that college, like, if Alabama wins a national championship and they win a bowl, it goes, the majority of the money goes in a pot for the SEC.
Yeah.
I didn't know
Alabama
that.
Doesn't
so
get all
I,
of
see,
it.
And see, that's pathetic to me. Like, a loser should not get part of that money. If you didn't make a bowl, you shouldn't be rewarded.
Yeah, because I think the winner of the BCS championship got $16 million, goes to the SEC total.
Yeah.
And I think, if I'm not, I want to say a third of that goes to Alabama, with the rest being split between the rest of the team.
And it's stupid. And the SEC. Vanderbilt, what have they accomplished? Nothing. So I can.
Well, it pays to allow yourself in the right division.
It's called
a
welfare business. That's what it's called.
Well, anyway, you know, like you said, it was a great conversation you all had Sunday with the Apple G's radio show with Coach Rodney, lovely Vivian. Hopefully, I hope to be back on the show probably towards the end of July.
Okay, you know they like you, man.
I'm going to be there every this coming year for college football. Every Sunday I'll be there to
I'm
give
trying
my
to get
opinion.
Ray on the show too, matter of fact.
But Orioles slumming.
Are they slumming?
Two and eight over the last 10.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently out one game out behind the Rays, which is amazing to me if you only win two out of your last 10 games.
That's true.
And tonight they're starting a big three-game series up in Boston.
Yes.
I can't get the accent right.
I know, don't worry about it. It's overrated.
Yeah, it is. What's happened to your overachieving Baltimore Orioles?
Well, it's injuries that played a part. Right now against Boston, they're up 2-0. Hamill is pitching, so hopefully he can put us back on the winning track. It's injuries, man. We lost Nolan Rymo at the time. Was I think he had like five home runs, which early in was hitting over 300. We've pitching has struggled of late. Jake Arrieta hasn't pitched the same like he pitched in the beginning of the season. Command has been an issue. So we're basically trying to get our players right. Nick Markakis is now out for like 2 to 4 weeks due to a break in the wrist. Adam Jones had an MRI, but it was negative, and he's playing tonight. Has an RBI in the game. So, but that's the main thing: injuries, and honestly, pitching hasn't been good of late. So hopefully Hamill pitches well, continues to pitch well tonight, and the Orioles have an opportunity to get on a momentum because they've been taxing. They've been putting too much stress on the bullpen. These guys, these our starters aren't going deep into games other than Brian Mattis, who's pitched lights out of late. Hamill's pitched good, you know, hasn't pitched great, but he's pitched good. We need our other guys to step up.
All right, you alluded to part of this answer. You said they need to stop putting so much pressure on the bullpen. But put your skipper hat on. Pretend you're Buck Showalter.
Yeah, I got it on. I'll wear it backwards, though. I don't wear my hat for it.
What else does the Orioles need to – what do they need to do to improve on this recent skid?
Well, like you said, I mentioned earlier, getting healthy, man. That's the big thing, getting healthy. But what I mean by getting healthy, because obviously Nolan Ryan won't be back for a while, though there are good signs that he'll be that he doesn't need the third epidermal. He's had he has a bulging disc, I believe, in his neck, a bulging disc in his neck. So he won't be back in for a while. Excuse me, but I think Brian Roberts is close to being back, and that guy to me, around two weeks, if he can come back, he's the spark that this team needs to do something special or to get on a streak or to start going back to playing good baseball. And also, Zach Britton is coming back, so we're going to actually have a good left-handed arm starter who potentially can be a lights-out starter. So we have players that are on their way back that can help this team win games. And that's very important, especially pitching. Zach Britton. If Zach Britton comes back, he's going to take Tommy Hunter's spot, who is already in AAA. If he comes back and pitches well, this team can do something.
Okay. You just talked about pitching. Jake Arrieta has been struggling. He's 2-7 with a 5.53 ERA. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, you are, sir.
Jesus. Should he be sent down to the minors, or should he stay up and try to regain his confidence and bounce back from this? Well, I can't even call 2-7 a skid.
No, ever since the beginning of the season, man, he's been struggling. And he's had games where he pitched lights out. He's pitched lights out against the Yankees and got a W. So I don't know what's up with Jake. But I think that he does need to be sent down. Chris Tillman has pitched lights out in Norfolk. If you don't know who Chris Tillman is, he's the guy that the Orioles got in the Eric Bedard, Adam Jones trade. He was included with Adam Jones to come here to Baltimore. Or was it Sherrill? I'm sorry. It could be when we got Sherrill, too. I have to check that up. But it's Adam Jones. I'm sorry. It's Adam Jones. I think Tillman can be called up. He pitched a one-hitter in AAA. He went 8 innings and only gave up 1 hit. So he's a guy I believe that can come in and help this team out. But the only thing about Chris Tillman, he has hit the strike zone. Jake Arrieta is still going to be one of the main cogs of this team for years to come. But his problem is he's just not attacking the strike zone. He needs to attack the strike zone. If he attacks the strike zone, the Orioles will win games. He will win games. That's simple. On his starts, the Orioles will win games. He needs to attack the strike zone. He keeps falling behind, and that's an issue. And if he keeps doing this, of course he needs to be sent down so he can understand that this is not tolerated and he has to really take his craft a little bit more seriously.
All right. Yesterday was the MLB draft.
Yes.
The Orioles picked up a guy who, with the number 4 pick, who can attack the strike zone, Kevin Gausman from LSU. What do you think? Are you excited about this young prospect?
The Orioles, this one thing, but the Orioles are stocking their organization with a bunch of arms. They got Dylan Bundy, who has been, in this area, has been compared to Steven Strasburg. He throws over 100 miles per hour, and he barely gives up hits in the minors. Now, we got this kid, Gausman, who has reached 100 miles per hour. He's the fourth player pick, so he's highly
touted. High expectations.
And he's 11. He was 11-1 at LSU. So, I mean, he is a special cat. And he's 21. So, in essence, being a college kid, he can be called up earlier than the average pitcher. So
he's mature. He's gone through some adversity.
So I can see him, next year. I mean, starting off probably in Frederick, being in Bowie around the same year, and maybe in 2-3 years, he could be on the big roster. You know what I mean? So I like it, but for me personally, I would like to see the Orioles go after a position. I would like to see them have gone after a position player in the first round. I think our minor league affiliates we don't have enough hitting in our minor leagues.
Well, since there was an MLB draft yesterday, the other local team,
the Nats,
had the 16th overall pick. They drafted Lucas Giolito out of Harvard Westlake High School in California, a right-hand pitcher, strapping. I think he's like 6'6", if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's tall, 6'6".
Yeah.
And he's like 230,
so he's not a little guy. He's had some arm problems during his career in college. This guy is one of the better prep pitchers in the nation.
He would have been the best pitcher. They said that he would have been the best pitcher in the nation if it wasn't for the arm injuries. He would have been the best arm. He would have been the number one pitcher picked in the draft if it wasn't for the arm injury.
Yeah, so to me, I think the Nats got tremendous value at the number 16 pick because we all know in the MLB draft with when you're picking around pick 16,
like
this
100
is
100 rounds.
It's 100 rounds, but you aren't going to necessarily get.
Oh, I hear you. I'm arguing with you.
Yeah, one of the greatest of players. He's definitely a good player. Those elbow injuries concern me, but also what concerns me is he still hasn't decided whether he's going to go to college and play or he's going to go to the minors, be relegated to the minors and start out his career. But whatever he does, if he's having these elbow arm injuries, he just needs to go ahead and get the Tommy John surgery. Just go ahead, knock it out with today's technology and with also the rehab capabilities that'll be at his dispense. He'll come back stronger than ever.
Yeah, and he throws 100 miles per hour. I mean, he's been clocked at 100 miles per hour. Just like the Orioles pitcher in Gausman, he's been clocked at 100 miles per hour of throwing it before, excuse me. And this kid has been compared to Roy Halladay.
Roy Halladay. So, you know, like this is another reason for Nats fans to be excited.
But he was a surprise, though, in that spot. People didn't think. People thought because the arm issues that he would be drafted later on. The Nats took him. They saw something, and I think I was listening to Harold Reynolds from Major League Baseball Network, and he stated that the crew with Kevin, I think it's Kevin Hart, the former GM, that the Nationals are known to be patient with pitchers with arm trouble. You look at Strauss, look at Zimmerman. You know, they were patient with them, and this kid is no different. It doesn't bother them. It doesn't hurt. They see talent, they go after
it. And with as many arms that the Nats have now,
exactly.
You have.
Chill.
Yeah, you can finally. The Nats are at a position where they have the right mix of veterans and a lot of young talent, you know, young arms and also young bats, where they can say, okay, let's be patient. We're going to pick the guy who we think best is the best player available that's going to help us. Not next season, but two or three seasons from now.
Well, real quick, I want to say I didn't get to say it for the Orioles, dude. The dude, Gausman, he's a donut eater, so I don't know. He might be a fat boy on the low.
Yeah. CC Sabathia.
I like donuts too. These chocolate donuts. I haven't had those in a while.
Oh,
hungry,
man.
I got my fat boy mode. Damn, it's chocolate donuts. Anyway, big series for the Nats. It's starting today. They're playing the Mets. I think they're, like you said, they're up 1-0.
Yeah, they're up 1-0.
Jordan Zimmerman's pitching.
Jordan Zimmerman's on the mound. Zimmerman's 3-5, but he does have like a ERA of 2.33.
They don't give
mistaken.
Any run support. They suck. With
yeah,
that.
They don't. And he actually, when I last looked at the stat line, he had 4 Ks.
Yeah, Zimmerman's a good pitcher. Let's move to the side of the diamond that's giving him issues. We'll give him Jordan Zimmerman issues, not the opposition, but his own team offensively. But Michael Morris is back. Do you think he'll help the offense out tremendously, or do you think it'll still be the same old Nats right now with a lack of offense?
I think he gives you more pop in the middle of your batting order. Lombardozzi's been playing good ball. Bryce Harper, both of those two guys actually made history this past Saturday. Was it Saturday, if I'm not mistaken?
Something like that. I don't know. Actually, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, being the first rookie duo to hit back-to-back homers in a loss to the Atlanta Braves. It was Sunday.
Yeah, 3-2. They lost 3-2.
Right. They were up. At the start of the game, two home runs to lead off the game. I was really excited. If you have Ian Desmond, Lombardozzi, Bryce Harper, and then you have Michael Morris.
And Zimmerman, too.
Zimmerman probably hitting behind Michael Morris. That's you have some speed, some good speed, base running, and some pop at the top of that lineup, which the Nets haven't had all this season.
No, I hear you. Hopefully, Morris can hit like he hit last season. It's always an issue, you know. They do have what's his face? Oh man, oh what's his name? Adam LaRoche too as well. So hopefully Morris can hit. If Morris can hit, yes, it will help that team a lot because Morris is a good bat and he has power and he's a good average hitter when he's going right. I think right now he's 0-for-8. I believe he's 0-for-8 from at the moment in the season. I'm not sure if he had a hit tonight. But Morris could be effective. And I think you mentioned Lombardozzi, excuse me. I don't want to mess his name up. Like you said, he stepped up. Matter of fact, he's played second base at the same position that Danny Espinosa plays. Mm-hmm. And he's been struggling. I believe that Danny Espinosa is hitting 223 or something like that. But I think he feels that he's getting on the streak. He's getting on in a roll. He feels comfortable now at the plate. But when you with the emergence of Lombardozzi, who I believe is hitting 308 or 309 or something like that. Do you feel like the Nats should consider trading Danny Espinosa, who was a highly touted minor league player and a player with a lot of ability?
No, I don't think you want to trade Danny Espinosa just yet. Lombardozzi's a young player. He hasn't shown that he can consistently do it over a long stretch.
He's a good leadoff hitter, too.
He's a very good leadoff hitter for a long stretch. So I think you hold on to Danny Espinosa. And if this team is going to make a playoff, a pennant run, you're going to need a guy like Danny Espinosa come those later on in the season.
Yeah, so are you telling me that, you know, do you bench Danny Espinosa? Is Lombardozzi going to start over him? Because, I mean, to me, as a prospect, or off ability alone, if I'm going off ability, Danny Espinosa is the better player. But is he not producing, though? That's the problem. So do you bench a player that's probably better, potentially, using that key word again,
potential,
over a guy that's actually playing well, who's young as well?
Because I think you bench him. I think for now you bench him. You don't get rid of him just yet.
That's going to be a problem. You don't see dissension in the locker room then? If he's on your roster and he feels that he should play? Because he's not a player that you can, like, peg as a backup player.
I think with Davey Johnson, the strong personality, he'll manage the situation correctly. Okay. So that's why if this were last year and you had, what's his name, Jim Riggleman?
Yeah.
As your
– He managed well, too.
He managed well, but I don't think he is as apt at controlling the personalities like Davey Johnson.
All right, let's move on. Bryce Harper, you mentioned he's played well. He's hitting 288. Hit a home run on Sunday. The kid is starting to show what everybody was talking about. Now I get to see it. I don't have to hear it prematurely. I get to see what he's actually doing instead of people projecting what he's going to do. He's actually now doing it. Happy for the kid. I don't hate on a player who's playing well and playing the right way. But when Jason Wirth comes back, what do you think is going to happen? What will Bryce Harper's true position be? Because I think Jason Wirth is playing every which way.
That's a good question. I don't know necessarily what the future holds.
Yeah.
I'll say for now, because Bryce Harper's playing so well, that's a good problem to have.
Of course.
Because Bryce Harper, you see the development every time he plays in the game, whether it's at bat or in the field.
Yeah, he's getting better.
He's running the bases. He's just getting better every day that he's playing. He plays the game. Jason Wirth is the big free agent that they brought in.
And actually
two
played
ago.
Well too. He's actually been playing
yeah,
well.
Yeah, he's actually playing well.
He played well before his injury. Excuse me.
Yeah. So it's a good problem to have. I would think Wirth plays left field, correct?
Yeah, he plays – well, no. Morris will be playing left field.
Well, then I say you stick Bryce Harper in center field.
Say he's in center field?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I agree. I think Bryce Harper plays center field. I wonder if he can play it well, but I think he'll be playing center field. I think you'll get Wirth in right, and you'll have your man – we'll have Morris at left. I do think there'll be a problem, though, in the outfield. That's a slow outfield. Other than Bryce Harper – it's not the fastest outfield in the world, because Michael Morris playing left field, who is a Gold Glove first base. He's a potentially a Gold Glove first baseman now playing left field. So that's going to be, to me, you lose a lot in the outfield, not by having him there. To be totally honest with you, now if he could be, if he's going to do well, all praise to him. But it's hard putting the first baseman in left field. I'm sorry, or in any outfield position. I don't care how easy left field is compared to the other spots in the outfield. You know what I mean? So, anything you want to add to that, Will?
No, that's it. I think you summed it up perfectly, man.
Thank you, sir. You know I try.
With your knowledge of baseball, man.
Yeah, man. One of the only brothers who cares about baseball, man. Yeah, it's wild.
And not only are you just a brother, you're Nigerian.
I'm Nigerian, and I like chicken. I don't eat watermelon. I eat rice.
And you hate hookah.
I hate hookah. I do. I hate hookah. Side note, I love jumbo sliced pizzas, too.
Yeah. That second one that I got was horrible.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah, I couldn't believe you got a second one.
I was very hungry and
that's
very
what
drunk.
Drink alcohol, man. Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. I put this on my Facebook page. I won't lie, not but you, but talking about me. I was like, this one thing about Adams Morgan. I hate Adams Morgan. I do. I despise it.
Yeah, it's too cluttered.
But dog, when you're fried, you can't say no to a jumbo sliced pizza, dog.
No, you can't.
I'm serious. You can't say no to one, man. And so every time I go to Adams Morgan and I drink enough. It's like, when I think about jumbo sliced pizza, I'll be like, yeah, I got to have it. Yeah.
If you go to Adams Morgan, for those of you who are familiar with the city, I'm pretty sure most of our listeners are from the DMV area.
Yeah, should be.
We might have some people who support us outside the area. We very much appreciate that because we're growing every day.
Yeah.
You know that going to Adams Morgan during the summer is very crowded, very hectic, a lot of people. But you know if you drink, you have to
it's a must, man.
Get a jumbo slice.
And yes, and I don't think we went into the one, because maybe my memory is just like jagged, but I don't think we went to the one with the, the one with the strobe light. We didn't do that one, though.
No,
right?
We didn't do that
one. Oh, yeah, you all, I mean, and I won't lie to you. Go to that, if you can go further up, because I was kind of pissed. I didn't want to go all the way up there, because some idiot decided to go to some hookah bar. I wanted the nearest people. But I ain't going to mention no names. And you know who you are because you listen to our show every once in a while. You was talking about Ray, how great Ray was. But anyway, you got to go to get the strobe light pizza. We call it the strobe light pizza because they got the strobe light where they serve in the big jumbo sliced pizzas. And I swear it plays with your mind. It makes you want to eat like pizza inside the room and eat like a fat boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Remember we went to CTI? And how fat we was on that joint?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, man. Yeah. Like I said, strobe light pizza, man. You got to get it. Got to. Got to.
Well, enough with our babbling. That brings us to another, to end of show 108.
Sam, I hate hookah bars. To the same, I hate it.
You know, shout out to Sam. Looks like French Montana. He calls himself the King of Poon.
It's King of Poon.
That's self-explanatory.
Exactly.
You can check us out on Eyes Radio Network. Just visit www.eyesradio.com to listen to the show. Visit walio.podbeam.com. Walio is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email us at urbansports@eyesradio.com.
Well, show's over. It's a wrap. Chris Bosh is definitely going to play. I can see. I saw him jogging around. He's going to be on the bench. We'll see if he's 100%.
We'll see, man. Game five. Like I said, me and you, we both think that the Heat take this one. These have been probably round right here. Yeah,
it's been very compelling.
Very compelling. Been the most exciting round of the playoffs thus far.
Yeah, right.
I'm ready to lock in and see if Miami can pull it off, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah, also next week we'll be talking about the French Open. I've neglected that, and I'm not talking about the hockey Stanley
Cup.
So don't care about it.
For those of you who are in the horse racing like I am, this weekend, the Belmont Stakes is this weekend.
You bet on these drinks?
Yeah, I bet on them.
You bet on them for real?
Yeah, I bet on them.
How much do you bet? Have you ever won?
Yeah.
For real?
I won at the Pimlico.
For real? How much?
Yeah, I put down $100. We're not going to talk. We'll talk about that off air.
Okay, cool. Don't put I want your personal business out there. It's all good.
But I'm excited. I want to have another one. Has a chance to be a Triple Crown winner. So history can be made this Saturday. So tune in, everybody. I love horse racing.
Damn, I want to bet on some horse racing. I want to make some money.
I'll hook you up with my man.
All right, cool. All right, we're out.
All right.